On this week's show, discussing the rise of pre-construction with Chris Walker from Lunacon Construction Group. In this week's news, IIJA, the state of design, reality mapping, and more. Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time. All right, we are back, and I have Ivart Foster with me today. Ivart, how are you, man? First time in the seat as a co-host with me.
I'm great. I'm happy it's Friday. I'm happy I'm here. I'm excited to learn and to engage with the both of you. And just for a warning, it is Chicago that I live in, so anytime there's a siren or a random noise, just remember that. Also, I'm watching my neighbor's cat in case you hear cat noises. So just keep that in mind.
Oh, man, we're hoping for the cat thing. Like, those are the way we go viral, right? That's the way we get YouTube to go viral or whatever. We go TikTok style. The cat walks by, knocks something over. That's how we'll get fame, right?
That's it. Luckily, she's calm right now. She's to my left, so we should be all right for now.
All right. Well, we'll be good for now. If you guys don't remember Ivart's episode, go back and check it out. It was awesome. It was pretty highly rated too, man. I was really excited about that, and I was excited to have you on as a co-host now. So hopefully we'll see that face a little more regular. I know you had some things going on, but we'll get you in the chair. But in the hot seat today is Chris Walker. Chris, how are you?
Good, man. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. And in the true sense of a hot seat, I decided to wear red headphones. So you're welcome for that.
I like it, man. Red headphones, kind of, you got the whole thing going right now. We're going to have fun when we get in the episode. Everybody, we'll talk a little bit about how we found you too. That's a little bit of fun. But before we do, we got to pause for the cause. And we're here for Pause for the Cause with the ConTech Crew and Brent Darnell. Talk to me a little bit about what you're up to and what you can teach folks these days.
Well, for the last 20 plus years, I've been talking about this mind-body connection and working a lot on focusing on things like stress and nutrition and sleep and exercise and how that affects performance and how that affects longevity. We've been focusing on this peak level of mental, physical, and emotional performance. Construction in general is a highly stressful environment, and you see the stress, and you always get the "I'm fine" answer. But I always try to dig a little deeper because people say, you know, I haven't been sleeping great and I'm really eating crappy food and I feel anxious. I feel depressed. I feel, you know, we'll start to really get into those conversations and figure out what's going on.
Those are the critical things people need it's the little steps, right? You're not here to replace a mental health diagnosis, right? You're here, but there's some resources you've got that can help people kind of figure out if, hey, they might be headed down towards that one.
Right, exactly. Barring some mental health diagnosis or if you think you have a mental health diagnosis, please go seek someone out and get that help and that diagnosis. But barring just a diagnosis or you're really struggling or having suicidal thoughts, you know, this isn't going to help you probably. But to check in and see where am I now and how do I keep from going down that rabbit hole, there's some great resources. And if you go to brentdarnell.com/resources, first, there's an emotional intelligence and physical symptom survey test. So we get your emotional profile and we get your physical profile based on physical symptoms and we tell how your body's working. And then we can correlate those two. And if you're experiencing burnout, it will show up in probably both of those evaluations. It's free. You just download it and do it. And just so see where you are. And if burnout's the top two or three that pop up and show up there, I would pay attention and start to really look at what are you doing with stress and nutrition and sleep and exercise and daily reflection and those kinds of things that we know we need to do to keep us healthy and keep us sane and keep us on track.
You've got to check in with where you are. You've got to work on balancing. It's not about the diagnosis. It's about preventing people from getting too far down the road. Like most of our construction folks that listen in, they take care of their cars. They keep them up to date. You know, this is no different. You've got to put in the maintenance on the body, on the mind, because you're racing this car around the track, right? We're not going to change that we're a bunch of race cars out there, but we can change that we do the right maintenance, take the right time, and really check in.
One more resource in there. It's the Tough Guy Survival Kit, guy being gender neutral. It's specifically written geared toward more field folks, but there's a really great chapter on stress management and peak performance in there. And it talks about meditation techniques and mindfulness techniques and breathing techniques.
Well, those are all great resources. If you didn't hear that before, it's brentdarnell.com. That's brentdarnell.com/resources. Check them out. They're there for free. Brent, thanks for joining us on this Pause for the Cause. All right. You know, we talked about the cat. That means we're back on YouTube. So check out youtube.com/@thecontechcrew, where if Evart's cat makes a jump in, you can like it, smash the subscribe button, catch all of our new shorts, all the things we're putting out. Don't miss out. All right. Chris Walker, Chief Estimator, Lunacon Construction Group. I'm excited to have you, man. I'm going to be a little bit honest. This was a little bit of a stalking method here. I found Chris on LinkedIn, and I'm going to tell y'all right away, you got to go check out the episode show notes, look up Chris Walker, follow him on LinkedIn. The guy's got some really great stuff going on, and we sat down and had a conversation. So tell people, Chris, a little bit about yourself, how you got to where you are today, and we'll start diving into some of that stuff you've been talking about.
I appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks for stalking me, I guess. I guess it worked, right? Here we are. So a little bit about me. I'm the chief estimator for Lunacon Construction Group. We're down in Florida, so nice and sunny. If you hear that accent, it's because I'm from Jamaica. So that's where I'm from. I moved to Florida a little over 11 years ago. Got into the construction industry like in 2014, 2015. But my degree, what I went to school for, is in engineering. But more to the point about estimating, you know, when everybody talks about construction or gets into construction, what you hear about is the wins, right? You hear about this big skyscraper that was built and how quickly you built it, how you made money, and, you know, everybody's safe. But what we really don't discuss is pre-con and how we get to that point, the planning to get to whatever you're trying to achieve. So as I progressed in my career, I didn't realize that estimating was actually a skill. I thought it was just something that everybody knew how to do, and it is what it is. It gets built, right? So as I progressed and did more estimates, learned more, engaged more, even spent some time in operations, there was just a big void in pre-con. So not too long ago, just the beginning of this year, I decided to start posting on LinkedIn and just things off the top of my head. And I mean, I've been getting great traction. I'm happy you said that you enjoyed some of the content. I'm just writing out of my head things that I see and things that I think are catchy. But the idea is to, you know, bring some awareness to, actually put ourselves out there to let developers know, architects know, owners know, you know, what it actually takes to get something built. So that's really the idea. You can check out my LinkedIn profile, and, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, man. I mean, a couple of the things that you said that really struck me. The first one was, and this is a recent one, was estimator, project manager, superintendent. These are now becoming silly titles. Whether we want to believe it or not, the future of construction development is now requiring all members at the table before a fork is stuck in the ground. And I like that. It's you went for the fork instead of the shovel.
Fork's more aggressive. Three prongs, you know? Yeah.
A little bit more aggressive. So tell me a little bit about, you know, that change. I mean, that's one of the things you've been highlighting consistently. And it's something that, you know, I'm passionate about and have talked a lot about, the rise of pre-construction. And, you know, you have estimator in your title, but I think you go beyond that. So talk a little bit about that changing of the titles being silly, what you meant there, and what this change really looks like for construction.
Well, for the most part, for the firms I've worked for, it's been mostly private work. And obviously, anytime you engage a developer, they want everything, you know, and you end up pricing and repricing and repricing and repricing. And the beauty of that, you know, is when you're dealing with, say, a 30% set of plans, it's all conceptual. So if you want to reach out to subcontractors or vendors for pricing, you know what they're going to ask you. Where is this? I don't have this. So then you have to lean on someone who's more experienced, you know, in operations, and then your superintendent, your project manager for some intel. So after a while, you start developing those thoughts or those skills to know what's necessary. And what I find is even on a public job, which is what I do mostly of with my new role at Lunacon, it's very valuable to have all of those heads in the same space, you know, to have the pre-con head, the superintendent who's the boots on the ground, and the project manager who kind of just puts everything together. And I think this industry, I mean, there's so much money in construction right now. There's so much building happening. The only real way to do it is collaboration. You know, everybody wants to get a deal built, right? And instead of hard bidding it, right, and hoping for the best and hitting a budget, everybody's really leading towards a design build. I'm sure you can relate. I mean, your company's joined, so you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I just find that approach is so much, it takes longer, yes, but it's so much easier. You're making decisions right away. You know, your decisions are forthcoming and you bring up all the problems and move to the next step instead of, you know, taking one step to take a step backwards. So I don't necessarily want to say passionate about it, but I just think it's the right way to go. And the more awareness I bring to that, I think it's the better it is for the industry.
Yeah, I think you hit on a couple of things there. Yes, certainly at Join, that's where we've doubled down on the collaborative world, and design builds a huge part of that. In fact, you know, anybody who's been listening has been listening to us cover some of the FMI stuff, some of the just the ridiculous numbers that are showing that it's collaborative delivery models are the way. I just found it really interesting that, you know, we're talking about having architects in the room and having owners in the room. And I liked your addition of those field folks because it's about, you know, really taking the experience. When you have, you know, 30% clarity, you need somebody who's got a whole lot of experience.
You have no clarity.
Yeah, exactly. You really don't have clarity. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's I'm interested because it does take more time, right? Yes. It takes more time in the planning. Yeah. So why is that planning phase more important? And what have you found it to really, how does everybody in that process win? Because that's something else you consistently go to is everybody's got to win.
Well, here's the first thing that you have to take off the table. I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast would understand the industry we're in. You have to have the right owners aboard. I mean, that's plain and simple. You can't have the wrong guy who wants the best price or the cheapest price, not necessarily the best price. You have to have the right head aboard and really speak about the experience, not so much the price, because that's what you're perfecting here or improving. So although it's taking longer in the planning phases, and yes, you know, design costs money, architects cost money, interior designers cost money. It's still cheaper to sit at a round table and talk for 6 months than to hit the ground running and have an issue and have to rebuild for 6 months. It's a lot cheaper. So in that sense, yes, it's longer, but it still ends up being cheaper in that sense. So that's number one, is you have to start with the right ownership. But the biggest thing is, you know, from an education perspective, you know, in other words, if the owner wants to be a part of the planning process, the thought process, it's invaluable having all those people in the world, because one thing I learned also throughout my career, and I'm still learning, no one person knows everything, you know? So the more heads we can have in a room is the better it is, you know? So the faster we can collaborate and just bounce ideas off of each other, I'm an expert at this, you're an expert at that, you know, is the faster we get to a resolution, you know?
Yeah, you hit a lot of things, but in construction, we do not like to be told we're not the smartest person in the room. I think that's I think Ivar, you can agree with that. That's a unique perspective that's changing.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting what you said, because I was doing a little bit of research on you, Chris, on your LinkedIn, and just looking at your experiences. What, in your opinion, makes a very strong estimator? I know that collaboration is dependent upon external stakeholders on the project, but I'm curious on a personal level, what makes someone a good estimator over time in this industry? Because you can't come out of college and be an expert at this, but how can someone accelerate their career if they're in this realm, if they're working in pre-con or anything to do with estimating?
Well, thanks for asking for that, because you know, nobody gets out of school and says, you know what, I want to be an estimator. Nobody, right. Ever. they don't even know what it is. So thanks for asking that. I think the biggest misconception, and probably why I'm doing fairly well, you know, progressing in my career, is the estimator is the, in everybody's heads, it's the guy, the nerd with glasses in the back room with a hoodie on, and he just sits there and puts things together. He just calculates things. He's the brightest guy in the world. He doesn't talk much. You know, there we go. That's him, Jeff. That's him. And if he misses something, he's very shy. He's like, I'm so sorry I missed this. That's what everybody has in their head as an estimator, right? And it's actually the opposite. You know, that guy, he may be smart and he may have some information, but the truth is, estimating is relationships, is people. We don't build anything. I can't build well, you know, but what I can do is I can tell you pricing. And the reason I can tell you pricing is because I know who to call. And that's really the difference. So yes, there is some technical knowledge you need to have. So an engineering degree, a construction management degree, that kind of thing is good. But I think it will propel you in your career as an estimator is more so not just estimating, but the business of estimating. So understanding that I need to contact this person for this price. And if this person does it, are they hiring somebody else to do it? Can I undercut that person? Can I get them to do it directly? Can we manage it directly? That kind of thought process. And that requires somewhat of an outgoing personality to ask those questions and just be open.
I'm curious, at what point in your career did it click with your workflow that a lot of the things that may on the outside look rigid are actually very malleable in construction processes, which, you know, dives into that soft skills approach towards project delivery, towards estimation? What, or if it did happen, allowed you to see things as having opportunity for creativity in estimating?
It's a very simple answer. You're going to be very disappointed. You spend, again, I don't know if you've done estimating in your life or you know, dealt with plans and just reading and try to figure things out. It's very intimidating. I think you're going to mess up. Because you're looking at so much and there's so many trades involved. And if you screw up, I mean, this is thousands of dollars you're dealing with. I think the epiphany happened when I went out in the field and you're looking at it and you're like, oh, this is really easy. And you call the carpenter and you say, hey, how does this work? And you call the steel guy, help. And that's it. Your answer is there and it's finished. You know, so I just realized that by just asking the right people, you have all the answers. And you mentioned something, Jeff, that I found interesting, that everybody wants to think they're the smartest in the room. That is true. But when you start asking questions, I guess because everybody wants to be the smartest in the room, everybody just starts talking. So you get all this information. So as long as you're humble enough, you just gather all this and now you know what you're doing, you know, which is really interesting. But I will add on as well that I think the best estimators are the people who come from the field because they know it. I mean, they've seen it, they've done it. So they're just, you know, remembering or thinking through the job as it happens, as opposed to just reading plans. They're seeing what I can actually do and what that translates to in terms of cost, as opposed to just, okay, you want this detail, it's going to cost you this.
You hit on a couple of things there that I like the business acumen and I like the asking a lot of questions. I'll be honest, right? I'm an IT guy by trade. I have no business being in construction other than I really like to ask questions and I really like to listen.
Here we are.
And I have no reason to be, you know, yeah. I can't build anything. Everybody who's heard me talk on this show knows that consistently if I build it, it will be condemned, including my kids' Legos. So you don't want me building anything, but you do want me asking questions. And I think you're right. I mean, the storytellers in our business, you did a good job of encapsulating that the stories that they have in their heads are actually the construction projects of the past. And they kind of forewarn us of what can happen in the future. Most of those, hey, you should add a contingency here, or you should, you know, think about this, are because somebody didn't think about this and somebody didn't add a contingency where they were. I'm wondering, since we went through, you know, a pandemic and, you know, everybody was pushed remote, how did you continue the collaboration, the keeping people, you know, together and connected since then? Has it become easier? Has it become harder? Like, what's the state of the world for you in that world right now?
Apart from the people problem of keeping everybody together, of course, let's be honest, it's cost, right? Where are my stuff? When is it coming? How long is it taking? How much is it going to cost? I really think it comes down to relationships. As someone brand new coming into the industry during COVID, it may have been really difficult because you just don't know anyone and you don't have the opportunity to know anyone. Things are opening back up now. So, you know, going to an expo or a mass event for us down in Florida, you see a lot of familiar faces and everybody's happy to see you. So, yeah, I could see where that's a bit of a challenge to for someone brand new in the industry. But to be honest with you, man, we've been busy ever since. We haven't stopped. So it's been hard to see people, but we just wear masks. We go on Zoom. We go on Teams. You know, everything just continues, you know. And at least down here in Florida, big state, but construction is a very small industry. Everybody knows everybody. And it may be this company today and then that company tomorrow. But I mean, literally, if you're in the business, everybody knows. And it could be, okay, you're today, but you're this person's son or you're this person's brother or you work there. But everybody knows everybody. It's all connected. So yeah, that makes it a lot easier.
I relate it to like the NFL to a degree.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you can play running back for the Dolphins, you can play running back for the Bears. If you can project manage down in Florida, you can project manage in the Midwest to a degree. So a lot of transferable skills that could be leveraged for other things. That's why you see superintendents that can leave,
absolutely,
start a new job the next day. Foreman, trades, all of it.
And it's a team. It's a team effort, you know. So, for example, I have a friend who works for a residential firm. They do very high-end homes, and they were looking for a superintendent, and they picked up a guy who was a mechanical contractor, and he's been the best superintendent for them because he looks at, you know, he's not just looking at the ceiling and saying, oh, that could work there. He's thinking of layout and how this interfaces with something else. I'm sure you know about BIM. You know, he knows about all those conflicts. So he's the right guy for the job, you know, and he just needs to now learn the rest of the trades. But he has the raw skills, like you're saying, that are transferable, you know. So that's been relationships here in Florida. Fortunately, I don't think it's been too big of an issue. But again, someone just coming in brand new may have been a challenge. But as soon as you get in, you're in.
And that makes me think, and I'm going to ask you kind of a personal question or an intrinsic question. Obviously, there's not a lot of people of color in the industry. You being on this podcast surprised me. Just full transparency, most conferences I go to, I'm the only person in the room that looks like me. So
I want to give you some company, man. I want to give you some company.
So one, I'm happy you're here. And two, I'm curious how you have seen yourself on project sites, how that may have affected your confidence levels in what you've done. Because obviously you're very well spoken. You're here. You're in a leadership position. You're influencing the industry from your perspective. But what did it take for you to get to this level of comfort and for this ability for you to connect with people who, you know, are new or people who maybe aren't used to working with someone that looks like you?
Well, thank you for that. I may get a little deep here, but, you know, please don't, you know, no intention of making it too soft. But I come from Jamaica, as you know, where, you know, we're all black. I actually went to a private school where I was probably one of five black people in the entire school, which is kind of crazy to think of. So from a very young age, I never saw color. I just never, you know, because a private school in Jamaica, just because Jeff is like, what the hell are you talking about? It's Jamaica. If you think about it, it's a Caribbean island, right? And all the wealthier folk wanted to send their kids to a school. So I happened to go to that nice school. So I was one of the few black, my brother and I were one of the few black people there. So from a very early age, I never saw color. Yes, of course, I'm black, yeah. But it just never meant anything to me. But I think the way I'd answer you, Ivart, is, you know, you are what you believe you are. You know, if you think that you're the black guy in the room, then everybody's going to see you as the black guy in the room. I just see myself as another guy in the room. You know, I don't see color. And you know, when I go somewhere, I could feel that, you know, you see people look at you like, but when I approach them with my openness, it dissipates, you know. So as long as you don't see color, so to speak, it goes away. And quite frankly, everybody's embracing it, you know. Construction is a team sport. And let's not be silly. We know what construction is. It's hard work. So they're not expecting a nice guy in a suit to show up, you know. Yeah. So I come and I'm well-spoken and, you know, we get the job done. But thanks for asking that. It's a...
Yeah, because, you know, it's interesting that you just said, you know, you brought in a mechanical trade to come in as a superintendent. So you brought someone with a completely different and diverse background into a new role. Mm-hmm. And to a degree, you cross-pollinated his experiences into something else. Yeah. How else, or do you feel that there should be more of that in the construction industry as far as diversity of thought, diversity of positions coming into the industry to disrupt it. Do you think that's a strategy that should be intentional?
Well, the big thing is looking at it as like a big pie, right? You have all the raw ingredients, and how can I put this together to make the good pie? Because that's what good builders do. You know, we all have the same outcome, but what are you going to do with your ingredients, right? So one thing I'll say that's cutting edge that Lunacon is doing, I think it's really, really brilliant. I mean, I'm a chief estimator. I have 10 estimators under me. Everybody's virtual. Everybody's in the Philippines, you know? And don't think, Chris, come on, they're in the Philippines. They speak fantastic English. They're all civil engineers. I mean, some of them are licensed engineers. Some of them worked in the field for, you know, 10 years. And we're able to be obviously competitive with our pay. We're not paying them what the typical person over there would make. And their output is just as good, if not better, than someone here. So that in and of itself allows us to scale much further than the average construction firm. And, you know, one would, you know, you'd be concerned about the collaboration, right? Opening up that set of plans and pointing to this, pointing to that. Teams breaks that problem. You can collaborate better on Teams than you could do it in person. You know, I mean, when I just started this role, I couldn't bid a job without printing out, 24 by 36 and running through it. But now I just zoom in, zoom out on Teams, and I'm good to go. You know, so that's one big thing. I think, COVID did that to us, where it forced us to think not just, I need you to come here in 15 minutes, but can I call you? Can that be a video call? And it's become a lot more efficient. And also the reach. I mean, we have jobs where we need equipment from Sweden. And you call the guy on Teams, you look him in the face, you get that, you know, you understand what it's about, instead of, we need to meet in blah, 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 I need to come see your factory. You know, that's kind of broken that barrier. So I think COVID has been really, really helpful in that. At least from my perspective. Remember, I'm still pre-con. So that's one of the big things I've seen.
Yeah, you hit on a number of things there. I like the ability to look somebody in the face that way. Yes. Also, yeah. You know, the outsourcing and offshoring, so to speak, of some of that stuff is pretty consistent in a lot of businesses and a lot of different verticals these days. And it's a global economy, right? And I mean, a lot of software development is outsourced that way. A lot of BIM, Evart, is outsourced that way these days. Like that is a common classic way. There is some belief. I think it had something to do with people's experiences on technical support or on or with what are the big call rooms or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like that they got this idea that nobody speaks good English or can communicate or is intelligent. It's like, that's just not true, right? This is
but it's interesting what you said is about offshoring that scope literally out of the country. Is that wasn't possible years ago. Technology-wise, latency with file transfers, just sending a gigabyte of data was really hard to do.
Exactly.
Now that's instant. Now you can work in the cloud on a model, which is something that has basically decreased the amount of emails for projects. Yes. How do you feel technology will play a role in your job in the future, as well as the industry as a whole, for collaborating in unique ways, like what you just gave as an example? Where do you see technology playing a role, and where has technology already started to make an impact in your workflow?
So if you're asking, yes, it's true that they are coming for my job. That's right. AI is coming for us hard. But that's why I collaborate, you know, because AI can't do that. You know, it can't have those conversations. It can't look people in the eye. It can't see things that the software didn't pick up. So yeah, I don't know the names of the softwares, but I mean, there was one that was put in front of me where essentially you upload the plans and it gives you a takeoff of all of the finishes, everything. So yeah, you know, it's not nice to hear, but it exists. But the way I look at it is, instead of, wow, they're coming for a job, it's that makes us even more efficient. So that's one less thing I have to worry about, and I could focus on bigger stuff, you know, the conversations. That's how we use our virtual team. It's not that they're going to do the same things that we do. We get more FaceTime, which is really what construction is. It's a relationship business. You know, it sounds stupid because we're building, but it really is a relationship business. You know, and I have been through this, Mr. Owner. I'm going to tell you the way that it should go, and you should follow me. That's really what it is. So that's what I see AI creating these virtual teams just makes us better.
Yeah. So you're spending less time on the administrative task and more
exactly.
on the actual
exactly.
management.
Exactly. And I'm all about win-win. And it's a win-win. I mean, less minutia for us. It's more time and more money for them because they're getting paid in a better currency. And, you know, it's a better product, you know, and I'm telling you, it gets to a point. I mean, my team, it's seamless. You know, they work on our schedule. They know my tendencies. They know what work, you know, what works for the company. And they're hungry to help. They can't wait to do more, you know, so it's a great relationship.
Yeah, you hit on a couple of really tangible things there is that, you know, I consistently say this with AI. First of all, we have like record low unemployment and we have way too many jobs across the board and not enough people, right? We just don't have enough people that can do what you do. And Chris, what I think you're telling people and Evart, I think we both know this is that, you know, it's your expertise. It's you. It's your personality. It's the experience that you bring to your customer who is that owner. And ultimately, you know, whoever is going to inhabit or experience whatever project you're building, right? Mm-hmm. And by getting rid of minutiae, by, you know, eliminating mistakes and details, you're not cleaning up messes. You're actually got your head up looking forward as to where the job can go. And then really providing a ton. I think it's going to challenge builders, though. I think that's why, you know, I said this recently about the rise of pre-construction and it being so important over the next 3 to 5 years because, look, you said hard bids going away because it's a lot easier to find it early. We don't have the people to build it wrong and then, you know, do rework. We used to, you know, we really used to be able to go, okay, cool. That means I can put another crew out and we can fight over change orders in court, but we're keeping our teams busy. We just don't have those teams anymore, right? No. We don't have the time. So I'm wondering, like, as you bring your head up and start to look at that experience, what are some of the ways, you know, Lunacorp and you are differentiating yourselves? You've already got this outsourced, so you can do more with your connection with your owner. What else are you doing? What else do you see changing in pre-con in the next 3 to 5 years that, you know, am I wrong? Is the rise of pre-construction wrong? Somebody hit me on LinkedIn the other day and said, I hope I can keep believing, but I've been around since the 80s and it hasn't happened yet. Are you a construction company that's inundated with applications? Are you struggling to get technology adoption? Are you worried you're creating data silos? We refer to that as gray work. You want to learn more about gray work and how leading construction companies are getting past it? Then join me at QuickBase's Empower 2024. Go to quickbase.com/empower.
I would agree with you on the rise of pre-con. I mean, here I am, right? I mean, 10 years ago, who the hell would care about a chief estimate or whatever? Give me the bid so I can build it, you know? But no, I think what we're doing on a more personal level, as in for Lunacon, we're diversifying. So they brought me in to really focus on private work. So we give pretty much a full suite of options to like owners. So, you know, say you're a developer and you come in and not just from the building side, let's say you want help with your performer, because obviously they all buy this for some form of return, whether it's rental or for resale, and they can hold it for a certain amount of time, cap rates, that kind of thing. We can provide that for them. We can actually create a performer and give it to them. And obviously, listen, projections are projections. We have that discussion, right? So that's another thing that we're differentiating ourselves with, because again, it's collaboration. It's not just, I'm going to build this for you and that's it. I get my fee, move on. There's so much more to it. This property management as well at the end that you could get into too. So, you know, that's one way we really treat the owner as we bring them through the entire process. It's not just one thing and that's it. Also, Lunacon is looking to possibly take on developments themselves. So purchase and be the owner, which, you know, really puts yourself in the industry, right? And apart from that, it's just diversification. Like, you know, we do public work, we do private work, we do federal work as well. So we're pretty much all over the coast. But that's why I have such a big team, because we do a lot of stuff. To keep the quality up, you know, I have different people that focus on different things. But it's really just diversity, just keeping the wheels turning and having, you know, a foot in something else. And we're good at certain things and we obviously pursue those well, but we are always testing and, you know, keeping the options open.
I was going to say, what are some of the pain points that you're experiencing now that you assume that, you know, probably your competitors are experiencing within the pre-con estimating workflow, that area product delivery lifecycle?
Oh, boy. Again, I know most people can relate to this. It's burning subs out. So the lousy part of pre-con is you got to bid 10 of these to win a job. You know, so if I call you, hey, man, bid this job for me. Hey, man, bid this job.
Do all the work.
Yeah. Chris, no, I'm not bidding anymore. You know, give me a job. But I'm bidding too. So what do you want me to say? You know, so that's probably the biggest thing. It's you have to be very selective. You can't, you know, some companies, I won't mention names, they have a set of plans that they just blast it out to 400 people, you know, the exact same people every single time. So every time they get a job, they get 10 jobs a week. They send out these 400 people the exact same jobs. You're burning your subs out and they start ignoring your emails. You start becoming that guy. You know, we're extremely selective with who we choose. And, you know, there's a whole process as to who is being invited to this job and why they're being invited to this job. And the reason why we're pursuing a job, that's also a very selective process. So that's one of the big things that you have to be careful of. Also entering a new market, as we do from time to time, it's converse, you know. Now I don't have friends there. I don't have relationships. So building those relationships are tough. But if you stay consistent with your message, if they feel that you mean well and you're trying, you know, to give the best quality to the owner, they'll collaborate with you as well, even if they don't know you. But those are the two big things. Again, it's all people. So those are the two big things I'd say.
Yeah, and I'm curious as far as the unknown subcontracts or unknown trades. Mm-hmm. How do you guys take on de-risking that relationship? Let's say with it's a non-established, or you know, you don't recognize the logo in a smaller city. I know that you guys did some work in Terre Haute, which is my hometown, Indiana, for FCA repairs there. And I'm curious for, let's just say for this example, that there's a new specialty drywaller or a mechanical HVAC supplier that you guys never worked with. How do you guys take on their pricing, or do you guys even kind of proactively dig a little bit deeper into their numbers than you would with other subcontractors? Do you guys take on that relationship differently, or is there a protocol that you guys leverage for that?
That's a very pointed question, Ivar, but this is good. This is good. First and foremost, all right, no problem. So first and foremost, it's all about, that's my job, right? It's risk mitigation. That's what it is. You look at the issue and you see where the risk is. You identify the risk. Obviously, if you don't know that sub, you don't know that vendor, red flags, right? However, if they're spec'd, I mean, if that's the person I have to use, it is what it is. Now, some ways to go around that, or some ways to mitigate that risk, is first and foremost bonding. Typically with public work, you have to bond the project. And what we do to as a second layer of risk mitigation is we bond that contractor as well. So we'd ask them for their bond rate, because, you know, that tells us where they are in terms of their financials and stuff like that. And we'd bond them. You know, it doesn't matter the value. If it's 20 grand or 2 million, you know, we bond them. And that way, if they don't deliver, we have something to go back to. We can go to their bonding company and get some recourse. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we use Building Connected. And if you don't use Building Connected, please use Building Connected. It's fantastic. And this is not a plug. I'm just saying. I think we do a decent job of pre-qualifying our subs, you know, so we know what they're about prior to them bidding. Most times we follow the formal pre-qualification process, but I mean, I'll be honest, during bidding, you just want numbers. But throughout the process, you start asking for information and you kind of see who you're dealing with. And, you know, the smaller moms and pops, and they're needed. But, you know, I think I said it in one of my posts, excuse my French, but there's an ask for every seat, right? There's a job for every sub, or a job for every contractor. So you have to be, if it's the right job, the right size, you make sure you pre-qual them accordingly. If it's a small job, then you're a little bit more lenient. But yeah, that's how you mitigate that.
Okay, so here's my follow-up question to that. First off, I full transparency, I'm at Autodesk now as an integration subject matter expert, building connected to, you know, everything that we can touch. We
actually you owe me a commission, sir. You owe me a commission. So shout out
people. But my question to you is, on the inverse of that, imagine that you decide to start your own specialty trade company and you're a minority business owner and you're brand new to the industry, meaning like less than 5 years of projects. What advice would you give yourself to get into the industry where financially or where on paper you don't have the same level of experience or your risk is much higher than someone who's an incumbent trade? What recommendations would you give to them? Because I'm assuming they're probably listening to this podcast when it gets aired, for them to interject themselves into bids that maybe on paper are above their weight class. What advice would you give them to qualify themselves or to leverage anything within their disposal to get into these projects?
Well, that's a good question. I know where it's leading to, but I'll take the long road. I think the first thing, you know, you mentioned a specialty trade as a minority business. Obviously, that means that I've done the research to verify that it's a viable business and it makes sense. Because if the market wants it, the market wants it, right? It is what it is. And one of our things when we're focusing on marketing, I keep telling the owners, for marketing to subs is, I don't want to say it's unnecessary, but it's really not needed. If you have a good job, that takes care of that. In other words, if the market's there, subs will come. You know, so assuming that that's buttoned up, I think I'd probably partner with someone like you guys to put us out there, because I think the beauty of like building connected from what I, because when we signed up, that was what I learned, that you make it very easy for the subcontractor to sign up, you know, and then you charge the GCs for this access and you keep up with their information. So in other words, you're doing all of the heavy lifting for them, putting them out there, and then we just find them with the right jobs. So again, providing that, you know, I'm this small minority sub and I have this specialty item and the market's there and I know I want to penetrate this market, I would just partner with someone who is already reaching out to these GCs, because obviously the market's there. So if I cast my net out, you'll find me. And that's it.
Mm. So the reason I ask, because obviously I live in Chicago. I'm a president of a nonprofit called Working in Schools. And the other initiatives I'm working on with other business leaders here in the city is how to get more minority vendors and specialty contractors outside of construction too, into competitive bids to where they have a chance to start beating out incumbent trades. And we're collectively coming up with some concepts. So I appreciate the answer, but that's where I'm coming from as far as like, how do we start to initiate things proactively to allow those opportunities for them to get the RFP, for them to maybe even get some coaching on how to respond, and for them to possibly leverage any type of resource available to start to win these bids that they normally never get the chance to win.
Well, our owner, she used to work for the director of construction for City of Fort Lauderdale. She's very passionate about small businesses and you know, really getting public work. Everybody looks at it as the you know, you're really doing public work. What are you thinking? But there are many incentives, as you know, at least in Florida, we have SBE and CBE and all these things that, you know, minority people can really get in and do well with. So I'd really encourage, you know, you're since you're the president of that initiative, really take a look in Chicago or wherever you're at for what they're looking for, these government entities, because I guarantee you there are some contracts that even some of the bigger guys, they partner with a minority business just to be, you know, viable, because without that partnership, they can't do it. So again, as long as you do your market research and you realize that the market's there, the rest is history. You know, you're going to find jobs.
At the Contech Crew, we focus on technology that solves industry problems, and we've always believed in our sponsors, so much so that I went to work for one of them. So today, I want to talk to you about Join. Every construction project is a unique prototype, and it's actually shaped by thousands of decisions that impact the owner's business case, design, and the budget. Today, the communication driving these decisions is disjointed across all the stakeholders. Work happens in email, Excel, estimating, resulting in delays, waiting for decisions, waiting for access to information, and sometimes that information is outdated and incomplete. Managing the expectations of the team and keeping the project moving forward is a constant challenge, and a lot of times drives skepticism amongst the contributors. Join empowers general contractors to build with confidence and maximize the potential of every project by connecting these owners through new workflows that fit into your existing processes. We bring design teams and trade partners into a single platform. There's transparency and collaboration in the decision making, which builds trust and sets projects up for success. You might be asking yourself, do you need another tool? Well, let me tell you, Join fits in seamlessly with your processes and your other tools. In fact, we're here to help those other tools. Regardless of your estimating system or your project management process, Join will be a valuable added resource without disrupting those other systems and your teams. Check out Join, the collaborative project delivery platform for the built environment. Learn more at join.build. Yeah, so I'm going to give Ivart a pass there. To everybody listening, I actually particularly didn't prep either person about the other person beforehand. Not for any, I kind of expected y'all to realize this looked a little different. I'm going to be honest, right? Like, I don't think Chris expected Ivart, and I don't think Ivart expected Chris.
Hey,
and,
oh, wow.
Yeah. But I think that's because, like, look, I've been on the show for 6 or 7 years now. We've done a lot of episodes, and we had to put our money where our mouth was, right, and start to highlight the opportunity for diversity in the business, whether that's minority, women-owned, whether that's people from outside of our industry with just diverse backgrounds in supply chain. Like, somebody with a supply chain background could probably come and start a trade contracting business and kick a bunch of people's butts in that business just by knowing how to get the supplies and to organize the supply chain. This is a, it is an opportunity, and showing that opportunity is part of what, you know, I get to do sitting in this seat. So everybody listening who thinks I set this up as an Autodesk commercial, that is not what I did. although it turned into a little bit of one for a minute, but that's okay, right? We're about technology here. We're about transparency. If it's honest, you know, I work for Join, right? It's honest. I'm focused on pre-construction and was chasing Chris because of that. Not actually for his diversity as a human, but for his diversity of thought that I was reading is what I was chasing him down for. But you guys nailed it. And there's just not enough skilled trades out there, right? It is an opportunity for anyone listening that's got an entrepreneurial spirit to learn about our business, learn our industry, and come in and start something. So, and there's lots of great ways, like, you know, what Building Connected is doing to help trades make it. I also, I mean, this was years and years ago, I'll plug Parrick Construction. I was walking a Parrick Construction site, and they had a crane on site, and the Grizzly superintendent that was walking us around stopped us and said, you know, I'm going to take a second here and talk to you guys about something. People talk about, and I think I'm going to get it wrong. Is it MWBE, Minority Women and something? I always get the acronym wrong. But he said, you know, people look at this as like some sort of like charity thing we have to do. Let me tell you how I pick these folks. You see that crane operator over there? I had to move that crane. I knew there would be some issues with the laydown area, given that we have a hospital operating right here and we're building a wing. And I knew if I brought in most of my other crane companies, they would be unwilling to move and would nail me with huge change orders, et cetera. But I knew this business was hungry, fit in that, and would work with me because they wanted the work. And so I'm just looking for hungry contractors and hungry people that want to move. And I knew that this group would do that.
Yeah.
So there's a huge opportunity there, right? There's a huge opportunity to break in to our industry, and we have to do it, right? Yeah. We need it.
I got to say, Jeff, I appreciate the pleasant surprise. I said a little bit ago, there's not many people that look like me and Chris in the industry. This is full transparency, we can be honest here. And I think with more injection of creative minds, meaning people who don't have a preset idea on how things should go in this industry, that increases the probability of disruption. And that increases the probability of new outcomes because you have new variables coming in that have never been in this industry, at least on paper. And I think that's where we're at the precipice now, mixing new technology capabilities with people who have the ability to come in because of the technology. Meaning we've kind of democratized old workflows into centralizing data to leverage workflows that used to require, you know, 15 years of experience. You can bring that down to 5 years experience now with advanced technologies. So that not only democratizes who can be in the industry, but once we get those doors open up a little bit more, that's where I think there's a lot of opportunity across all three of us in our roles to kind of scale it. And Jeff, you're obviously doing an amazing job with bringing on diverse thoughts and people in the industry who are really leading the charge at the organizations to do this. But what I personally want to say to you, Chris, is I'm so happy that you're at the position that you're in, because it does two things. It not only helps your company directly, that you are someone who's traditionally, you might be a first generation person in construction. I know I am. But you naturally don't have to fit in. Exactly. And how you make decisions is with a confidence level that is not coming from the standpoint of trying to fit in or trying to do what you think you should be doing. You're being creative. You're creating new opportunities. But the other thing that you're doing that's not your job is you are allowing other people of color to see you in these rooms where they've traditionally never imagined that they could be in. And that's one of the reasons why, like Jeff, I try as much as possible to get my voice out there, because I'm thinking with that perspective as far as like, let me just be an example of influencing someone below me. And then not only that, subconsciously, I'm influencing managers and executives to see someone like me, and it de-risks, or maybe subconsciously allows them to anticipate or interpolate another me at the organization. So with that, Chris, I have one question, because this was a thought for a question is, you know, as construction advances with technology and as people who traditionally would never want to be in construction are migrating in, what advice would you have for, you know, people who don't really feel confident coming into the industry, or people who are wanting to like maybe transition into some construction related role? What advice would you give them to really hone their skills and to advance their career in the way that you have?
In construction?
Yes.
Yeah. It's two words. Solution-oriented. Solution-oriented. Mm-hmm. People get so caught up in the process and who did what and who didn't send this email and this person was wrong and you told me this deadline. In construction, you know, they say if you want to make an omelet, you're going to break some eggs, right? It's just that simple. It's not going to be perfect. It's impossible. But if you're solution oriented, you want to get to the finish line, you'll get there. And the biggest thing I would say, apart from, you know, thinking of solution, even when you don't know anything, you just know that we have to solve this problem. So let's go this direction. Keeping everyone posted on what you're doing as you go. So you don't want to break all these eggs and say, well, we finished. So congratulations. No. You want to say, well, we broke this egg along the way, but sir, we're finished. You know, that's what I would say. And, you know, it's funny. I think this Lunacon does a good job of this. I mean, I'm a young guy. They gave me this great opportunity, which I'm very grateful for. They're really investing in the future, and they want that new blood that you know, people have. Yes, the industry is booming, but there are a lot of bad habits in the industry and a lot of pointing fingers and stretching jobs out and, you know, just things that aren't good for everybody else. It's good for the builder, but it's not good for the greater good. So if you're solutions oriented, I mean, everybody's going to love you. That's the MO.
It's a great answer.
Yeah, I think it's a great answer, Chris. It's solve problems, right? And you know, Evart, to your point earlier, like that is part of the role here at the crew, right? We have to, I think my dad taught me this when it came way back in the day about, you know, first you're an ally, then you're an advocate, right? And I think we are now advocates here. I think two things is that you're both extremely smart, have extremely different takes on things that really have nothing to do with color or anything. They just, you're both diverse thinkers. And I think that's the highlight for me is that it's a little bit of the whole package that we have to do here at the crew. We have to do this with, you know, women in our industry. They have to, you have to see yourself. Everybody does. Right. And I, you know, one thing we do have in common from a diversity perspective is I think Chris, you're a first gen. Are you first generation builder?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
First generation in construction. I'm first generation in construction. Nobody, yes. my dad's a bean counter. Like it. Yeah, nobody else
is,
in my
dad is
in my
medicine.
Family.
It's a different world. Completely different world. Yeah.
Yeah. So
he's very disappointed. I'm kidding. He's not.
But you got to think about it though. Yeah. You know, Chris, you got to this level that you're in without having an uncle or a dad or a brother or a cousin to pull you in and put you in a position. I got to the same position by moving to Chicago and not knowing anybody. And just naturally being a sponge for the industry. And it turned my attraction to it up even further when I started to discover things about it that I didn't know.
Right.
And I think that in and of itself is an intangible asset, because you're coming in as an outsider, you're asking more questions, you're pushing on doors that maybe at that company or in this certain workflow have never been pushed, because it never had to be. It never been questioned before. And you just naturally needing to seek that knowledge and becoming someone who creates mentors every time you have a conversation. Uh-huh. I think that's kind of the beautiful aspect of being a minority in this business, uh-huh. is because you are forced to find mentors.
Exactly.
In everything that you do. And that creates a new product and as your output. You're cross-pollinating experts because you don't have anyone else to really lean on. Yeah, you don't have an uncle to tell you what you should be doing to assign you work. So that's I'm curious if you feel the same way or if you've noticed that in your career.
I guess you're talking about that compass, right? Having that voice of reason to say, hey, man, I did this. You think that's right? And not really having one forces you to just, you know, focus on everybody. You know, you keep, in other words, it's very good because you seek truth. You're not seeking an opinion, you seek truth, you know, and that forces you to just get more educated. But honestly, I mean, you have to be, I don't want to say obsessed, but you have to be passionate about it. You have to want to know more, you know. And actually, I was going to flip the script and ask you guys a question about why you chose construction, why you got into it. I could start. My dad was building, unfortunately, my mom and dad had divorced early in Jamaica. And he had to move, and he had a piece of land, and he decided to build a house. And I mean, at the time I was a kid, it didn't mean anything to me. But just that process of seeing that piece of land transformed into a beautiful home, I was in love with it, you know. And I always wanted to be an architect. I ended up going to engineering school because I was too young. But now here we are in construction, and you mentioned an architect, and I say, ha, no thanks, you know, but it's different in Jamaica, but still. So I think the process of transforming something from literally nothing to something else and helping someone through those headaches and seeing the issues before they happen, I think is almost magical. So I just love the process. So that's why I'm so interested in learning more. But I'll ask you guys, Jeff and Ivar, what got you in the industry? What got you excited about this lovely construction?
Ivar, I'll let you go, man.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I, too, went to school for mechanical engineering.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to be an architect, and that's still the goal.
Oh, my God.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I had a two-hour conversation with a guy about this last night at this networking event. But I went to school for mechanical engineering because I didn't go to the school that had architecture as a major. So I said, if I just do mechanical engineering, I'll get there somehow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's just make all the doors open as possible. So I did mechanical engineering. Wow. I was a design engineer for 2.5 years. And how I got into the construction industry was my roommate at the time. He got a job up here in Chicago at Pepper Construction. He sent me like this 2-minute YouTube video. Kevin Bredesen, I don't know if you guys know him, but he was at Pepper at the time, and they put together like some VDC highlight roll VDC tools were out there. So I saw a drone, and I think I saw like some 3D modeling. And I'm like, I had no idea this was in construction. I had the most unclear perception of what construction was before I got into it. And then when I saw that video, and then my roommate told me about the opportunity that he thinks I should apply for, I actually applied or I sent an email, whatever it was, and I didn't hear anything back. So I started to like consider getting into the construction game myself by buying a house in my hometown.
Of course.
And I went to the sheriff's office to get this list of foreclosed homes in my hometown. Okay. And I'm sitting in my car, and that's when I get a voicemail from the hiring manager at Pepper that's 2 weeks late. The voicemail was in the cloud somewhere for 2 weeks. Oh, wow. I didn't hear it. So as soon as I'm about to go to see the first house, this voicemail hits my phone. I listen to it. I'm like, oh my God, this is 2 weeks ago. I call him back immediately saying, hey, you guys still interviewing for this position? He's like, yeah, can you be here tomorrow morning? So I drove 3.5 hours north to Chicago, took the interview, and then that next week got the offer. And then I moved from my hometown to Chicago. Why I love the industry now is because, like you said, you're seeing magic in real life. We're creating things that will live after we die.
Exactly.
Full transparency, we all know that. All these towers, these stadiums, these are going to be here for at least 100, 150 years, maybe further than that. And the beautiful part about it is we've literally found ways as humans to collect the things that have always been on this planet and transition them into facilities, to energy, to building. And you know, as much exposure I've had to the construction process, project delivery lifecycle from pre-con to closeout, I've got to see how many people and ideas are involved in a building. And I think a lot of people might see construction as just like physical hard costs going into the project. You got some laborers out there, you got some trades people, and that's the physical asset coming to life. But the things that happened 10 years before that, the developers who had to go through feasibility, the architects who had to go through schematic design and drawings, that's the beautiful aspect of construction. Is my building that I'm in right now could have been thousands of people involved in this that I'll never meet. Yes. That made this real while also making other buildings real time. So that's what I love about construction. But my ultimate goal is to be an architect. I'm just taking my time.
I like that. You're taking the long road. Chris said that earlier. I'll take the long road to get there.
So give me about 10 more years.
Well, now I feel like I should have gone ahead of you because that should have been the mic.
I was going to say, that's a hard act to follow, Jeff.
It is a very hard act.
Who's passionate about it? That's all. I'm passionate.
Now you know why we wanted to have Evart here. You know, for me, Chris, I've been in IT and technology for 25 years. 10 years ago, I found myself with a masonry contractor. And I had similar experience to Evart. Everything I'd ever built had, you know, helped people go skiing or buy retail stuff or even done some real estate stuff and made, you know, a person's life better or whatever. But at the end of the day, I'd never walked past something that my technology had a part in building and had that feeling, that connection, like, wow. And I'm like, I only gave them some technology. I didn't put a single stone in place. I was working for a mason at the time. I didn't ever, you know, pick up a trowel or anything, but I felt connected to the product. And then I got to know the people. Yeah. And to me, the people of construction, especially from the labor side of things, the people that put work in are some of the most incredible people on the planet. And Evart, you're right. Thousands of ideas, things from our earth that became new things. But at the end, a human puts that thing in place and then it stands. And you know, Dustin that was on, Dustin Burns that was on not too long ago, I was at a speech of his and I used this line consistently. How many of you, and he said, all of you, most of you stayed in a hotel room last night. How many of you, probably 15, 20, 30 floors up, how many of you were worried that that bed would fall through the floor? None of you. Welcome to construction.
Exactly.
And for me, it's that tangible connection. Even that I sit here on a show and do this on multiple shows and do this and sell software to people that build things. We have projects that go through the joint platform that we feel like we had a hand in. And I see us all celebrate them. You know, we can't necessarily talk about all of them. A lot of them are under NDA, but we see the ribbon cut and we see this building open or this thing go to service the community. And we're just amazed and we get a feeling from it. So, you know, for us, that's why I'm here and that's why I'm hooked and why I haven't left and don't think I'm leaving anywhere anytime soon. So,
and I just want to add two quick things to that. Every super that you've probably ever met in your life, if you take them out to lunch or anywhere, they're going to point out every building that they even thought about. Forget about build, thought about. I was on that job. I was a laborer on that. I built that. It's a trophy piece. You know, I had something to do with that. I've looked at places. I bid that. I didn't win it, but I bid it. So I saw the plan. So I feel like I'm a part of it. And furthermore, something that's a little deeper. I was talking to my dad about this. We're all in the same space, right? Literally, we're all in the exact same space. Yeah, I'm on the second floor of a building. You're on the 15th floor, wherever you are. But we're all in the same space. The only thing that divides that space and makes this space unique to your space, wherever you're at, is the buildings. It's the construction. It's everything around us. It's, as you said, it's magic. I mean, you're literally creating something that's going to last hundreds of years. It's going to outlive our kids, our grandkids, everything, you know? And I think that's everything. That's amazing. To me, it's a very fulfilling career. You know, I respect everybody's career, but I just think it's one of the most fulfilling ones.
Definitely. Well, I can say we always look for that spot for the mic drop. If you don't drop your mic because, you know, I don't want to break that mic. But I think that's the mic drop moment, Chris. That was awesome. I really appreciate you coming and sitting down and sharing your thoughts. Now everybody knows why I chased you around on LinkedIn, because I think we got to hear a lot of those thoughts today. Good. So thanks for coming in and sharing all that with us today.
Appreciate it, man. And if you want to do this again, I'm ready to go. Nice to meet you too, Ivar. Pleasure.
Same.
Well, he's going to stay with us. Don't worry. Chris isn't going anywhere, but we've got to wrap it up and talk about the construction technology news of the week. All right, Ivar, what do you got? Your first two articles, what do you got for us?
All right. So the first article is the 2023 State of Design and Make article research report, just published this week by Autodesk. It really drives into understanding at a macroeconomic level the role and evolution that design software and what we consider make. So in the project delivery lifecycle, not just in construction, but in other aspects like media and entertainment, there is a segment in which creativity and concepts get merged into plans and designs for the release of it being brought into fruition. That category on a global scale is what's being now categorized as design and make platforms. There's a plethora of solutions that do this, but this article really highlights at the global scale how much digital transformations are currently perceived as a differentiator in business outcomes, as well as it dives into different perspectives across the industry for how centralizing data is going to transform business outcomes from a process standpoint. And the other article I have,
let's give you a little, I'm going to jump in on this one, because a couple of quick things I saw from it were 72% of respondents said that the workforce has evolved more in the past 3 years than it had in the previous 25. That's crazy. And then more than half of respondents said that their companies are hiring employees who lack the skills needed for their positions and plan to train them. We hear this consistently around AI and other things. Oh, it's going to take our jobs. It's going to do this. It's like, no, we still need bodies. We need to upskill them. We'll have to train them on what the new work looks like. But, you know, you've got to believe that you can, at least from this, you can bring people in and train them. If it is changed that fast, you know, per the first stat, you know, evolved more in the past 3 years, well, then you've only got 3 years on anybody you're bringing in, right? Because it's evolved so fast. So nobody's really up to date. And in a very short period of time, you can be up to date. I also, and this is a teaser, in fact, I will have already been there, so I can say it now, but I'm borrowing from Charlie Dunn here, and I'm doing a talk in a couple of days at the Northwest Wall and Ceiling Bureau, and I'm going to be talking about how construction and especially technology is building a time machine, right? And our whole goal is to take this digital time machine, take entire project teams and owners into the future to understand the built world and understand what they're designing and building and what's going to happen, and understands its impact on the world around us, so that we can come back to today and fix the problems that we identified. And some of those problems are those buildings. These buildings are supposed to be here for 150 years. Well, now if we understand traffic flow, people flow, potential use cases and tenant improvements and changes, because who knows, we just experienced a first of our lifetime pandemic. We don't know what's going to happen next, right? So by building this time machine and taking everybody into the future and understanding those things, we can come back to today and build much more effective things with far less issues. And man, isn't that, I mean, Chris, you're nodding your head. That's kind of the premise of a lot of what you talk about. I'm interested in how, you know, thinking about an article like this and thinking about the digitization and what's happening hits you.
It hits. it's what we want. You know, we want to be able to essentially store all that we've learned and, you know, take it to move everything forward. You know, so I think it's brilliant. I think it can only create good things.
I think Autodesk and others are trying to codify what our experiences are so that we can really share that with generations to come. So
yeah. One notable piece of information in here that kind of stood out to me is data drives decision-making, product development, and collaboration. And the majority of respondents across all the markets that were investigated in this, including the AECO. So there's three, just a real quick second on this. There's three different demographics or industries that were involved in this report. Architects, engineering, contractors, and owners is one segment. And across the board, from what I can tell from this data set, that's the most aggressive industry that's looking for data to make transformations. And their optimism, 54% of these companies, way above the other industries, they're going to look at data to make faster internal decisions. And then their number two usage of this data is to develop product services and projects faster. That's the two impacts that they're expecting data and digital transformation to do internally at the organization. They're not even asking them questions about the macroeconomic view of the industry, but more so what's data going to do for your organization? Almost unanimously, they all agree those two facets is where data is going to play a role. And that's usually where you hire somebody to do those outcomes for you. And now data is kind of slowly becoming the expert at every company instead of having to wait until somebody's 30 years of experience to actually get an ROI that's a differentiator on a project. So I thought that was very interesting. We're building a super superintendent slowly.
Yeah, I think, one thing we always say in our meetings is you can't argue with numbers, right? And I always used to say it when I was, my brother is an artist, so I used to always say with them, you can't argue with logic. Logic is logic, you know. And the more data you have is the more, real tangible information that says it works or it doesn't work. So the more information we have as such to, just move things forward. And I think, again, I had no idea you work for Autodesk. It's the truth. I think the way, because I went to engineering school, as I told you. So I know about Autodesk from AutoCAD and, Inventor, which is completely different from Building Connected. I think the way how they're just trying to merge the whole technical, built world, if you want to call it that, they have a very interesting approach. And it seems like the biggest way of impacting the industry is through research and data. The more of that you provide, that's the truth, and the rest will speak for itself. So I think you're just so laser focused on that the more we hone in on that is, again, the best is yet to come. So. I really like it.
Yeah, my only final thought on that one for you, Ivard, is let the folks know it's data-informed decisions. They'll never decide for us. It's not data-driven, it's data-informed.
There you go.
What else you got for us?
All right, so the other article I attached was, I think it's yesterday or 2 days ago, Oracle Industry Labs, which is located, at least one of them is located just north of me in Chicago. This week was their 1 year anniversary of the grand opening of the Oracle Industry Labs. And it's basically, I think it's amazing. I got to tour it and it's basically a sandbox environment for cutting edge construction technology. You can go see indoor drones. You can see fully autonomous robots. You can see Spot. You can see everything that is cutting edge in construction in this one location and go there and kind of beta test it and speak directly with the product managers or the implementation managers of those organizations and kind of get a bigger picture view of the type of ways you could disrupt different facets of the project delivery lifecycle with both hard tech or hardware and software. And I think what they're doing is going to be pivotal for the construction industry because it allows potentially technology stacks to connect with each other that maybe organically they wouldn't get to without it. So that's taking like laser scan data and giving it to a robot and having that robot leverage some of that information in real time and then throw on the 3D model, right? A lot of expensive technology implementation now available in a sandbox environment instead of you trying to propose it to an owner. That would potentially be another risk of costs and potentially not have a guaranteed ROI for its implementation. Now you can kind of de-risk that in one environment. And I think this could be very, very important for the industry to kind of collectively collaborate on piloting new technology. And I think this is a mechanism to do that. So the report I dropped in is a highlight on their reality mapping experiment. And reality mapping, for anyone listening on this podcast, it's 360 photos, it's drones, it's fixed cameras, it's laser scanners, anything that can capture the reality. And now that we've advanced the technology to the point of leveraging machine learning and AI to identify objects, now what do we do with all that identified objects? And that's kind of the thing that it breaks down here for not only construction, but utilities, manufacturing, oil and gas, and other assets. So check it out.
It's really cool. I mean, what Oracle decided to do there was awesome because, you know, we can't treat all of our construction sites like test labs all the time, right? We have things to build. We have timelines to make. We have deliverables. And so having something that functions as a real job site, but then can almost be recreated and look for gaps is so cool. I mean, I know the partners that are working together, you have industry, Pepper, Clayco, you have technology, Skydio, Pharaoh, I believe Reconstruct's out there, Manny Golpovar and their team. You've just got so many people capable of working together in an environment that's known but unknown as well. So I really love it. I mean, the reality of building a job site, just not everybody has that capability, and Oracle's done it, and they've done it in such a way that they're inviting others in. I think that's what, to me, what was super cool. So, I mean, Chris, it'd be kind of like a playground, right? Go in and check it all out and see what it's all about and try it out. Oracle has built this, for anybody who didn't know, they built this in giant facility that has different, and actually didn't they take a step back and they like even have an innovation center that has all of their verticals in one now? They were doing it as just the AEC. And then they said, you know what, we're going to bring everybody in the room. So they've built this building, Chris, that basically is an operating job site where you can test out technologies, test out workflows, really experiment with things. And they bring people in and tour them through and allow them to do experiments, et cetera.
Well, I mean, you know, not just the, of course, the obvious owner seeing what they get before they get it, right? And planning. Also training, it's a big deal. You know, again, I come from the pre-con world, so the more we can see in real life, even if it's not real life, even if it's simulated, it really helps to understand what's next. So that's a step in the way forward. And I think, again, you know, it's data. This is more information than the data, but it really helps, you know, put things into perspective. And allows you to, you know, skip some of those mistakes and get to the point, or inexpensively make mistakes rather than make it with the real job. That's great.
Yeah, right. Digital rework still rework, but it's a heck of a lot cheaper. I dig it. Well, Ivar, good work for your first show, bringing some really good stuff for some good conversation. Mine's going to seem pretty quick, but that's all right. We're running a little bit short on time, so I'm going to go through it pretty quickly here. This was a good one from Construction Dive. I'm always checking it out. And this was Gilbane creates new tech-oriented role. I found this interesting. We're seeing this. They named Alex Gutman as the chief technology officer. And I apologize here. I think it's Raul Saw has been named the director of operations technology. Two things there, operational technology and chief technology officer, and really stepping away from just IT people who then have to wear a second hat. There's a very big difference in the two. And then there's an even bigger one when you start to bring in the idea of operations. Now, I don't necessarily think these are new. And in fact, you know, last week's episode was, you know, Tyler Williams and, you know, field technology for DPR. What I find interesting is that they're doing it right now as many companies in our industry are actually pulling back and tightening up as we go into what can be an unknown economic environment, right? We know it's going to go down a bit. It has been going down. How deep it'll go, listen to whatever economist you want. You can figure it out yourself. But in the face of that, investing and continuing to invest in people and technology being the way, I think is an important indicator because as we've seen, the ones that have the guts, the companies that have the guts, the people that have the guts to shoot the gap in a downturn and actually double down on technology. You know, you were talking about, we've been talking about diversity across this, diversity of the work that you do. I mean, you guys are embracing that right now. Because one of them can go down and your business isn't shot, right? If you're all in on one type of work and that work dries up, you're in real trouble. Yeah. So diversifying is key, but also I think many companies are really having and fighting, and we're hearing this already, slowing down on their IT spend, slowing down on their technology adoption, is now is not the time to do that. You know, to go back to Evart's article, right? It's changed more in the last 3 years than it has in five. If you try to hang out for the next 18 months, batten down the hatches and close up your doors and windows, when you open up the doors and windows, it's going to look really different. Yeah. I think it's a, I think it's an important time. I mean, Evart, are you hearing people, you know, that they're the struggle there with people, you know, thinking now's the time to batten down the hatches and not spend?
Well, I'm not hearing that as far as like a reservation. Obviously I'm in a unique position where I'm working with other software providers and understanding the relationship between our platform or our product and theirs, and, you know, enhancing the communication of that effectiveness. But pretty much everyone's, from what I can tell, attempting to increase their digital transformation, their digital capabilities. And, you know, some of the drivers of that obviously is for operational efficiency, for, you know, increasing profit margin on projects, the stuff that's tangible. But the stuff that's not directly measurable is the things that I think will be the differentiator in 5 or 10 years of these larger companies is, employees don't want to do hard processes. Employees don't want to spend all day doing repetitive tasks. I'm just talking about office employees just for this scenario. It's like there's now so much opportunity in the construction industry for people who maybe traditionally have been project managers to come over in software or to do something else, to leverage skills that transition into a completely different role, that, you know, banking on them not being satisfied with the way that they do work is a risk at the company level. And you can combat that risk with allowing their feedback to turn into a new way of delivering work through technology. So I think technology not only plays a role on the project level as far as performance of the project and how you cohesively work, but it has another benefit that is not as easy to measure that will be affected or will be felt by the lack of a digital transformation strategy. Because it's never like an end zone. It's a mission. You keep changing. You keep pushing. Because you get better projects, you get better proposals, more cost effectiveness, and then you get happier employees. So I think almost everyone I've talked to, and obviously I spent the last 18, 24 months through Built Worlds, being able to interview founders, CEOs, and people in leadership positions about their digital transformation strategy. And they're optimistic towards it because, you know, over time, if you don't change, you can't afford to win the job, one, financially, and two, your employees are going to go somewhere else that's more technologically advanced.
Yeah, Chris, you're shaking your head. You're in, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you this. You know, one of the reasons I've, gotten successful fairly quickly is because it's all about technology, right? I can use email. I could text without thinking, you know, that kind of thing. That's what we do. So I'll say this, and I don't want to mention too many names because I don't know what, you know, it's not really sponsorship, but it's what we use. If you don't use Procore in this industry, it's almost like you're, who are you? What do you use? It's like, what are you doing to, you know, keep up with operations? It's just become synonymous with a system or an organization, you know? So, and on the flip side, if you're like a superintendent and you've been around for 30 years, and you struggle with keeping up with emails, keeping up with technology, you're almost obsolete. It's just the truth. You know, everybody's really leaning in. And I think, like you're saying, Ivar, the biggest or the most successful builders right now, of course, it's a relationship business. No, bar none. But it's a system. You know, what system are you using? And not just, you know, technology-wise, but what is your process, right? And that has to be system-oriented. It can't be people-oriented because, you know, God forbid, you know, my wife's sick, my son's this, I don't show up for work today and now we're in trouble. So you have to have something that's foolproof and that's ready to go that, you know, keeps the business going. And that's technology. And there's so many different products out there. So for anyone that wants to reduce their budget, I mean, you're going the wrong direction, man. You know, it's better if you outsource, you know, or try to get lean on your employees. But the technology has to be first class. It really just has to be.
Right. And I think I think technology providers, if there's any advice I can give to anybody who has a startup or technology providers in the construction industry, you have to be able to convey the ROI timeframe. Because you might see a cost of software being like big on the sticker price, but that's because you haven't considered how you pay for it yet.
Right.
And I think that's something that, you know, anybody who's in construction tech needs to start to prepare those conversations as far as like, how do I expect you to pay for this? Because you're not going to find more money. You're going to have to find out where the money is going to come from later on. So it and definitely also, comes from tech adoption.
To help you. Also, the what this new technology will do for you to open up more business for you. In other words, you could not have received this business if you didn't implement this technology. With this technology, you're opening up this new market, which is going to give you profit, which makes you afford it in XYZ. And even if the ROI is not the timeline they want, the experience is so much better, you know? So, okay. I'm spending. Yeah. I don't get my money 5 years, but it's going to be a very nice 5 years as opposed to 5 years of pain and, you know, it's no system. So.
No system, and then bye-bye employees, bye-bye
work. Oh, actually, this sucks, so I'm going to go find another job, you know? Yeah. So,
That's the that is. So, all right. My last one is this is a follow-up article to the IIJA sets aside $100 million for ConTech. When will it arrive? We covered this back in May of 2022. And so I've linked that article as well. And if you've got ENR, you can go check this one out. Or if you haven't used your freebies yet, US DOT awards $95 million in IIJA tech-related grants. That's right. The money is here. It's all coming out for tech-related grants. It's spread out. California got the most money, but it is spread out over Texas and other areas. And it's all for influencing and trying out new technology on the IIJA, which is, for the lack of a better term, it is the Infrastructure Act. That's, you know, really doling out a lot of money into the infrastructure world. And I think it's a cool thing to see that we're finally seeing that money hit the streets. Cause that is, that work is finally hitting the streets too. And boy, if you're in the infrastructure world, get ready. It's going to be a wild ride for a while. I think you're going to see, bridges, water, wastewater. You're going to see a whole lot of things over the next few years that we need to catch up. So this was a good one. I'm going to go quick with it though. So check it out if you're in that space. It's a great investment. I'm just going to say, guys, this was awesome today.
Yes.
Thank you so much to the two of you for sitting down and having an open conversation and joining me today. This was super cool. I hope everybody listening had as much fun as I did doing this one.
Yeah, I gotta say, Jeff, thanks for having me on. This has been great. Chris, I know that we're gonna run into each other at some point. Hopefully, I can see you at Autodesk University later in the year or some other conference. But this has been great. This is refreshing.
Absolutely, man. It was an absolute pleasure. And again, if you want to do it again, you know, in a sunny place, you let me know.
Yeah, I think we'll have to meet somewhere warm. That would be fun. Yeah, so I look forward to meeting you guys all out there somewhere soon. Thanks to Chris for joining us today. Thanks to Evart for sitting in the seat. Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Chris Walker. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.